Joining me in the Catalyst studio today is Patrick Reels and Steel, yeah. Strong like steel.
Yeah.
Affectionately known as Rosie.
Yes.
Welcome, sir. You are a senior consultant for the National Popular Vote.
All true.
And with the Institute for Research on Presidential Elections.
That's true as well.
You spend a lot of time thinking about the National Popular Vote.
I do more than most.
Yeah.
Yeah, that and the Electoral College. Some people accuse me of needing a hobby.
Yeah. You're in town today to speak at Tiger Bay. And this was recorded before it and we'll go out after it. So I'm just going to say in advance, that was one of the finest Tiger Bays we've ever had. Thank you for doing such a tremendous job.
You're welcome. You can revise and extend those remarks in about 3 hours if you'd like.
Cool. Yeah. Let's get the basics. You know, a lot of people who are jumping in will be familiar with the general gist of it, but they may not know how far the movement has gone, you know, with what, 200 or so electoral votes kind of on board at the state level. So can you just sort of give us the framework of what the basics are of your effort and where you're at today?
Yeah. So the National Popular Vote, a lot of people, don't understand is really a state-based movement, right? The Constitution of the United States in Article 2, Section 1 gives the state legislature the power to award electors. And so what we've done is we've formed an interstate compact where when states join, they agree to award their electors in bloc to the candidate who gets the most popular votes in all 50 states in the District of Columbia. So our plan doesn't take effect until a majority of the Electoral College or states with a majority of the electoral votes pass our bill. But when it does take effect, it does one thing for sure, right? It guarantees the presidency to the candidate who wins the popular vote or the most popular votes in all 50 states in the District of Columbia. Today, we've had 16 states, or I should say 16 jurisdictions, 15 states in the District of Columbia have passed our bill. That's 196 electoral votes. So we're only 74 electoral votes short of actually having a national popular vote for president, which we obviously think is in the best interest of the country and all the states, because it's really the only way to make every voter in every state politically relevant in every presidential election.
And the states that have jumped on thus far tend to be on the blue side, because I know that historically the Republicans have lost the national popular vote, but the last couple have been Democrats would have won had it been that way, right?
Well, I mean, there's a lot in that question, first of all. So I'm going to unpack it a little bit, which is, if you have a national popular vote for president, right? We don't know who would have been elected president in 2016 and in 2000, right? The principal shortcoming of the current system is that presidential candidates in their campaign only focus on a handful of battleground states,
yeah,
right?
So gotcha.
Being here in Florida, I understand that I'm in the heart of the beast, you know, a battleground state, Florida, which gets all the attention. But 4 out of 5 voters in 4 out of 5 states are absolutely ignored during presidential elections. So, you know, if you move away from the state-based winner-take-all system to a national popular vote for president, the campaigns are going to be run differently and you're going to have a different result. Talking about the blue states that were the early adopters, yeah, I think you're right to recognize that those are states that traditionally vote Democrat in presidential elections, but you happen to be talking to a Republican who's trapped behind the blue wall in a state like Minnesota.
Right.
I come from the only state that voted for Walter Mondale, right? Uh-huh. So like my vote has not mattered in a presidential election in my entire adult lifetime. I think it's also important to point out that in New York, one of the states that have adopted the compact, it was the Republicans in the New York Senate that advanced the bill 4 times. Before the Democrats would even schedule a vote on it. Mm. And I think it's also important to point out that Oklahoma Senate has passed our bill and the Arizona House of Representatives, which are not exactly the most progressive chambers on the planet. They happen to be reliably red Republican chambers that see merit in a national popular vote for president. So, well, I think it's accurate to point out that there are 16 states that generally vote Democratic in presidential elections.
Right.
From day one, this has been a nonpartisan movement of Republicans, Democrats, and independents trying to improve the way we elect the president of the United States.
And I'm actually going to repeat that point back because I think it was actually a bad question, because that did not even occur to me how different, you know, an election would be run or campaigning would be run. Because you just look back at the basic facts, you know, that what Gore and Clinton won the popular vote, but that is only because of that specific framework and how those elections were run. And it could have been completely different had it been run truly popular vote.
Yeah, and to put a sharp point on that, you know, in 2000, I grew up in American politics, right? And I don't run campaigns for a living anymore, right? So I'm not self-interested here. I just have experience in how presidential campaigns are run. And in 2000, we, meaning the Bush campaign, spent more money in the battleground state of Florida to win by 527 popular votes. We spent more money in the battleground state of Florida in 2000 than we did in 42 other states combined. Wow. So, you know, under a national popular vote system, we're going to be campaigning in all 50 states, because how much you win or lose each state now becomes politically relevant to the outcome of the election. And if you change the system, right, you change the incentives to campaign. If you change the incentives to campaign, you obviously change the outcomes. Now, Al Gore may have won in 2000. George Bush may have won in 2000, but it certainly would have been different.
So what's the main opposition? You know, why haven't we gone to national popular vote easily and quickly?
I think the reason we haven't gone to national popular vote easily or quickly is because we shouldn't go to national popular vote easily or quickly. You know, the truth is the founders in their infinite wisdom left the power to award electors to the legislature for a reason, right? They believe that the legislature was, and I think they're right, they believe the legislature was the body of government closest and most sovereign to the people and could be held responsible for making the decision on how we elect the president through awarding electors. And the truth is, I think the process is intended to be difficult because anytime you change sort of the nature by which you elect the president, there should be full consideration. You know, I think the legislature takes that job seriously. So the burden of proof becomes on the proponents of reform, right? I'll be honest with you. When I first heard the phrase national popular vote for president as a conservative Republican trapped behind the blue wall in Minnesota, I was like, hang on a second. This looks like and sounds like the communist plot to gut the Constitution and make Al Gore, you know, president. Those are two things that I'm not at all interested in doing. I will say that, you know, after I got myself educated, I became a full-throated proponent because I can't think of a single redeeming quality to the current system we use for electing the president, right? I think the current system is unsustainable because when voters in one out of five states are all important with the American president and voters in four out of five states are politically ignored, you have two different kinds of citizens electing the president of the United States, those that matter and those that don't, right? And whether they participate or turn out isn't all that important. Which is why I think you see turnout being 11 points higher in battleground states than flyover states. You know, so, you know, it takes a little while to sort of like, you know, think through the current system. I think a lot of people are confused by the fact they think that the current system is the Electoral College or the founder system. So they cloak themselves in the founders and defend it. Well, the problem is, you know, this current system we have today wasn't in place in a majority of states until the 11th presidential election was never considered at the Constitutional Convention. So you got to unpack all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, so then restating the question, taking away the quickly and easy part of it, what's the resistance though? So what is the main reason? It's just education? Is it, I'm assuming there are educated people who are pushing back against you. So what's the main resistance?
Well, I think the main resistance is time, right? Like movements like this don't occur overnight. They take pressure over time. Certainly, I've been in 35 states talking about this issue, going one-on-one methodically to legislators, and over time, in a bipartisan way, they are adopting this reform. So I think the principal resistance is around ignorance, and I say that with a small I. I don't mean that in a pejorative sense. Some sort of ascribing of value to the current system that doesn't exist, or some sort of misplaced civics lesson that, you know, teaches you something that isn't true. But I also think resistance to change is the biggest impediment. And I say that through personal experience as a, you know, look, I got the same pair of golf shoes I had for, you know, the last 8 years, right? Like, I don't like change. I certainly don't like it for change's sake. And so I think pressure over time, impediment is time, impediment is resistance, and impediment is ignorance. As an example of that, there isn't anywhere, I bet at the Tiger Club today, if somebody asks a question, somebody's going to say, well, under a national popular vote, aren't the big cities just going to control everything, right? Well, the truth is that's based in ignorance. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't mean that in a pejorative sense. It ignores the fact that 1/6 of the nation voters live in the top 100 cities, right? And that means 5/6 of the voters don't.
Right.
I mean, I'm not a math major, but it means 5/6 don't.
Right.
And the other thing you need to know is that exactly 1/6 of the population, yeah, the 1/6 in the city, by the way, votes 63% Democratic, which means almost 4 out of 10 voters in those cities vote for the Republican candidate for president. But the other piece is 1/6 of the voters live in rural America outside of statistical metropolitan areas, and they vote about 60% Republican. So 4 out of 10 of those voters, right, vote for the Democrat. Now, why would any presidential campaign focus on 1/6 of the voters and ignore 1/6 of the voters? The answer is they wouldn't, right? So it's just working through things like that.
So we have examples of states who have deviated from the standard, the norm, and how they award their electoral votes. And there are a couple of examples of those, which are Vermont and...
Oh, it's Maine and Nebraska.
Maine and Nebraska,
Yeah, Maine and Nebraska have what's called a congressional district system, right? So for example, in 2016... Donald Trump got one electoral vote out of the second congressional district of Maine because he won the popular vote in the second congressional district. The other three electors went to Hillary Clinton because she won the statewide popular vote in the first congressional district. Same thing happened in 2008 for Barack Obama in Omaha, Nebraska, the second congressional district there. That's what brings gerrymandering into play in presidential elections. So, you know, the truth is like a congressional district system really takes a bad system and makes it worse, in my opinion. Right. And the reason I say that is the reason I'm for a national popular vote for president is because I'm tired of all the influence that battleground state voters have with the president.
Right.
Right. And so, you know, if you go from this battleground state system to a congressional district system, you have maybe 50 competitive congressional districts around the country. And what the Mayo Clinic wants, right, in the first congressional district of Minnesota, it's going to get because it happens to be a competitive congressional district. Now, what happens is, like, even in Nebraska, when Barack Obama won the second congressional district, the conservative legislature there immediately filed a bill to move back to a winner-take-all law. It failed.
Right.
But then they determined to deal with it by redistricting the second congressional district, right? And so if you go to a congressional district system, you're going to have all of the problems with gerrymandering if you believe there are problems with gerrymandering in presidential elections.
As you bring this message out to the country, trust and building trust is a big part of that. And what percentage of your resources are spent trying to just make people believe that you're truly bipartisan, that this is not a partisan issue? You know, I came out asking the first question about it being a mostly blue state thing based on my not understanding how the election landscape would have changed. And you responded with, I'm a Republican, you know, conservative Republican. So is that a big part of the process to get people to listen?
Not in a contrived sense at all. I mean, the truth is we are an organization of Republicans, Democrats, and independents, and we all come to this issue honestly. Certainly with different perspectives, but never for partisan purposes.
But I mean, when you come out to the public and they're receiving your message, are they on the defensive because they think it's one side trying to lead the charge versus another side?
Well, I actually think anytime you have election reform issues, there's sort of this underlying sort of strain of partisanship underneath it that you have to get beyond. You know, the truth is I do that by being authentic in terms of who I am and why I'm a supporter of a national popular vote. And it's because I can't think of a single redeeming quality to the current system. And I'm tired of Republicans in all 50 states not mattering in presidential elections. But I'm also tired of Democrats not mattering in all 50 states, right? Because I believe we have these false crises around the American presidency that can be avoided. And maybe we can set down our jerseys a little bit and do what's in the best interest of the American Republic and American democracy. And so I think we talk to a lot of different audiences through our own authentic voices. Because, you know, we believe this is the most important systemic reform in American politics we'll work on in our lifetime. And I think what we need to do is we need to have a system around presidential elections which allows Republicans, Democrats, and independents, candidates, approach the American voter, right? And win on the basis of their ideas and alignment of their values with the American voters so that we can all live with the results and move on. I'm also concerned about sort of the disincentive for there to be party building on all political parties, right, in all 50 states. You know, we got bankrupt political parties all over this country because they don't happen to be battleground states and they happen to sort of export their political economy, meaning their time, their treasure, and their people every 4 years to try to win in a lot of ways with what isn't always the most important race in American politics, which is the presidential race.
Right.
You know, I think what happens at the local level, city council, state legislative, you know, matters more in my daily life than what happens in the White House. I just happen to believe that. And so, you know, we come at it from different perspectives for different reasons, but none of us seem to be afraid of our ideas. We're more than willing to have a dialogue with the American people and then, you know, sort of let them decide what kind of government they want to have. And then if we lose, you know what we do? We get organized for the next one. And at least the candidate who gets the most popular votes is elected president. We all feel like we were valued in that process.
Brilliant. Well, we're looking forward to the talk today. I'm sure there'll be a lot of great questions and a lot of great answers. And best of luck on your quest.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Hope to do it again sometime.